Hello, I'm Christy Jordy with U.S. Energy Services. Here with me today is Brad Smith, Price Risk Manager for U.S. Energy Services, and Dan Schroeder, VP of Merchant Services for U.S. Energy Services.
So what are the primary factors that contributed to lower natural gas prices we've seen during the past year? Dan, why don't you cover the demand side, and I'll cover the shale side.
I don't have any demand statistics in front of me, but just your couple of things happened demand-wise. You saw, obviously, with the economic downturn, business in general turned down, but you also saw regional concentrations of that, basically, in that Ohio, Illinois, Indiana area, a lot of Ohio, come off. And so there was not only a NYMEX impact, but also a basis differential impact because of the regional shift as to where the demand did come off.
And I'd add to that that from 2007 to 2009, we lost about 2 BCF a day in demand due to the industrial fall off due to the economic recession. So far in from 2008 to 2009, we gained back about 1.3 BCF a day. So we're still lacking going into 2010 about 3/4 of a BCF a day from the demand side. So that lack of demand has been a big issue. A big price suppressive issue for natural gas prices.
Now, do you think, and I haven't looked at a forecast for the summer, but do you think power generation could take up that three quarters of a BCF per day in 2010?
No. Going into 2010, very likely we will have a fall off in demand versus 2009 in power generation. Power demand fell close to 5%, somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 5%, but natural gas demand within the power sector actually increased in 2009 because of coal displacement. So because of low prices in natural gas, power generation facilities found it advantageous to burn gas as part of the fuel mix rather than coal, or at least a greater proponent of gas than they normally would. So that actually increased and supported gas prices in 2009, and was probably, along with exchange-traded funds, one of the only two price supports that prevented a complete collapse of prices in 2009. Going into 2010, we will very likely see less coal switching because of the contracts that the utilities have entered into that will force them to burn more coal. They've deferred a lot of the contracts and have huge stockpiles of coal that they're going to have to burn off. We also have about 6 gigawatts of coal-fired generation, new coal-fired generation coming online in 2010, which will almost one-for-one displace the gas generation. A third of that is in Texas, which will directly offset and displace the gas generation. So we've got several headwinds, and then on top of that, probably the biggest headwind is the current natural gas prices are above about a 425, 450 level per decatherm, which is the cutoff level where utilities will see gas prices if they think they'll be sustained at levels below 425 to 450, depending on where they are regionally.
Now, is that going to be enough to draw LNG to our shores?
LNG has proven itself this winter during the record withdrawals in the beginning of January, that when there's demand and the economics are advantageous, LNG will flow at sizable levels to the U.S. The LNG capacity is now at a level where it can easily affect prices, and we also have LNG storage of probably another 70 BCF. So they can offload and store before they regasify LNG at about 70 BCF. So LNG will be another factor in 2010. The expectation is for a near doubling of LNG imports from 2009. And another factor to increase the supply overhang for 2010.
And when do you see most of those imports coming in? Kind of traditional summer injection season, latter part of the fall, or more levelized throughout the summer?
The view right now is that we saw a lot in high demand during the winter. We'll see quite a bit this summer because of global economics that put our prices above NBP, National Balancing Point, UK prices, which is the entry point, pretty much acts like a broker for LNG into Europe. as our deferred contracts through 2010, almost through September, it's more economic to bring the LNG to the U.S. rather than put. But that relationship is fluid and ever-changing, so we monitor that every day to see where the economics will lie.
With that LNG discussion, you know, what I was trying to get at is, okay, is right now I'm looking at just regional storage spreads for people to store gas for the winter in traditional storage reservoirs. Mm-hmm. And that typically runs $1.85 to $2.25.
From spring to winter?
Summer to a winter sale. Summer, spring injections to a winter sale. Right now it's running around, if you cherry pick, about $1.35 to $1.39. So to cycle storage, there isn't a lot of incentive right there currently.
Mm-hmm.
And so either the prompts need to run up either deferreds need to run up or the prompts need to come down, or a little bit of both, but I don't see it happening yet. So from an LNG perspective, is anything going to trigger your curves for the value of storage injections to widen out to more traditional levels and incent people? This is a long roundabout question about, you know, are we going to fill U.S. storage? And usually, eventually you will, right? We get plenty of gas and the demand is off. So what's going to give people incentive to make those storage injections? Is it going to be the prompt, or are we going to see the deferred contracts eventually run out?
It'll be the prompt eventually, but the longer that the prompt stays where it's at, you're going to have increased potential for LNG. You're going to have more producers hedging, which is even what we've seen today, to be very specific. You have a time where it's very cold, forecast is very cold, but it's viewed as the last fundamental part of winter. We're now in February of winter 9-10. Prices are down today, down this week about 20 cents on very favorable fundamentals based on weather, but producers are hedging that for 2010. They're seeing this as, well, fundamentals looking forward in 2010 are becoming more and more bearish. So today they're hedging it out, their balance for 2010, and driving prices down. So the longer the prices stay up, it gives producers the ability to hedge at advantageous prices and continue virtually guaranteeing supply. So you've got LNG plus producer hedging that will guarantee greater supply. And the longer it stays up, the less demand you have from the power sector and coal displacement. So you're going to continue the supply glut that we've had. So going through 2010, we don't have as much of a supply overhang as we had in 2009. It'll be a tighter balance, but we continue to see a supply overhang and increased production coming to market. Now, because it's a tighter balance, you're more susceptible to upside risks, such as incredibly hot weather this summer, or if you had major hurricanes come through, you're more susceptible to spikes, but sustained pricing is still going to be to the downside. You might have events that drive prices up, but eventually prices have to come down to that point, because the supply is going to increase the longer that the prompt month is inflated, or in my mind, looking at fundamentals, inflated. So that has to come down at some point. And then the bottom of the market, theoretically, is going to be coal demand again, or retail buying through exchange-traded funds that will then support the market. Last year it got down to 250 in September. I don't see that happening. I think it'll correct faster than that, because the supply overhang is not as severe. It's a tighter balance. But I see something very similar to what happened in 2009 happening in 2010 at inflated price levels.
You know, yesterday we were having a discussion about, in your meeting, that there's a bracket on prices, kind of a soft cap and then soft floor. The soft floor is coal-oriented. Is that that 425 level?
Right. In the southeast part of the United States, with transport for Appalachian coal, you're looking at a substitution level for coal at about 425, 450, depending on where you are. Almost all of the substitution that's taken place, or in 2009 and expected to take place going forward, is in the southeast, where that pricing mechanism works. If you're out west, you're dealing with a different type of coal, really, but a different pricing level. It's a different economic argument. So most of the displacement is geared toward the southeastern part of the United States.
That's more an Appalachian coal.
Exactly, yeah. Which is trading at $51, $52, and it's expected to increase. Most forecasts have it in the $60, $65 range per ton going through 2010. Yeah, so in answer to your question, I think we are in somewhat, you can never foresee events like hurricanes or extreme weather or any anomaly, but we're in somewhat of a banded range based on the upside of the market, somewhat capped by shale production, with lower break-evens than traditional conventional wells. So if we say on average, which is virtually impossible to do, but let's say because each rig is different, each well is different, every regional area is different, the economics are different. Even when you go out and hire different servicing companies, you have different economics and contracts. But let's say on average that you can, the break-even for a horizontal well in a shale basin is $4 versus a conventional well that might be $6 or $6.50, somewhere in that range. So as prices rise, you're going to see marginal supply come into the market from shale, which can be fracked and refracked and generate a tremendous amount of supply in very short time periods to bring to market. And so if prices get to an elevated level, say $6, $6.50, you're going to see a tremendous amount of supply come from conventional as well as an enormous amount from new conventional, new horizontal wells with hydrofracking capabilities. On the bottom side, like we just mentioned, coal substitution in the power sector is a tremendous demand source. In 2009, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 BCF a day. Going through 2010, we expect it to be less, but if you get to that price level, you're going to see a tremendous demand uptick and support for pricing at the $4 level, $4.15 level. Trying to keep it at a sustained level below $4.25, but you're going to see at some point there's going to be a buying interest. And then, as we saw in the past, speculators and retail buying through exchange-traded funds will come into the market at bargain basement pricing to try and create an investment vehicle. So they treat natural gas as an asset class and put it in their portfolio for 5 or 10 years and see where they end up. It's it doesn't make a lot of sense if that exchange-traded fund is based on futures and the structure of the futures curve right now. Being relatively steep really doesn't make sense, but we see that happening a lot where exchange traded funds get a tremendous buying interest at lower price levels. The people who put it in their portfolio and passively invest, it really economically doesn't make a lot of sense, but for people who are coming into the market hoping to make a quick return over 2 or 3 months, 4 months, it certainly works out for them at times if they could time it well.
From a customer's perspective, you know, you take a look at last summer, and gas prices were around that $14 mark. I don't think anybody expects that next year. And then you couple that in with a soft collar on prices in that low $4 to mid $6 range. If I'm a customer, I got a soft cap, or yep, soft collar. Why should I hedge?
Our customers and my outlook for our customers, you know, it varies by customer. We have very conservative customers who need to know their pricing a year or 2 years in advance. We have other customers who are dealing with margins and feedstocks and outputs. And so you have a wide variation in why you would hedge and who would hedge. And if we have somewhat of a soft cap on the market due to shale drilling, and we have somewhat of a floor on the market, not too many people are worried about the floor as an end user, but we do have somewhat of a floor on the market based on coal substitution and retail buying, bargain basement hunting kind of mentality. The way I would approach it is obviously matching your risk tolerance toward a hedging strategy, because that $4 to $6.50 range is obviously subject to anomalous events, you know, hurricanes, weather events, whatever the case is, and you don't want to be subject to the market or daily gas when you have clear upside risk, when the balance is getting tighter, the supply demand balance is getting tighter. But what I always tell people is, you know, if you have $1 million spend a year on gas, treat it like an investment account. So if your IRA has $1 million in it, you're going to go through 2010, you're going to arrange your IRA in investments that you believe in or you're hopeful of, or at least protect you from downfall. And you're going to go through with something in your head of, I'm okay with a 5% return, or I'm okay with a 10% return, or I'm aggressive and I want 15%. But you have a portfolio that you're comfortable with to go through 2010. Everybody's on board with doing that. If you have $1 million spend in natural gas, you should be going into 2010 with an expectation and a strategy that you're happy with to achieve 10% below market, maybe 10% below a budget number, but you should have a target in mind and expect a return on that through a hedging strategy that's beneficial to you more so than not hedging. And if you choose not to hedge as a strategy, that is a strategy. If you're an end user and you short the market and you choose not to hedge, then you really have an aggressive view that prices are going to fall. But I encourage everybody to go through 2010 happy with their strategy as an investment on that spend, so that they don't end up at 130% of their spend or something that is not palatable to their risk profile.
U.S. Energy is a premier independently owned energy management company focused on your organization's energy use. We manage natural gas, electricity, and alternative fuel needs for clients worldwide. U.S. Energy is a trusted organization of experienced senior-level energy experts working directly with you to strategically manage corporate energy procurement, as well as supply reliable, cost-competitive natural gas, electricity, and related services. For more information how U.S. Energy can help your organization manage your corporate energy needs, you can find us at www.usenergyservices.com. You may also email us at info@usenergyservices.com. And our number is 763-543-4600.